James Cook, is he another must-start running back in week 15? And finally, Dalton gives an impassioned plea, rant, case for Brock Purdy as the MVP. All that and more on the week 15 edition of Stat Nerd Thursday. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, December 14th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that, you know what time it is. Stat Nerd Thursday. So it is the one and only Dalton Del Don. Dalton, what's going on, buddy?
What's up, Harmon? Always good to talk to you. I don't have an intro for you today. Just a lot of takes, football time, fantasy playoffs. Let's get to the stats, man.
Absolutely. No pleasantries, no wasted time. Right down to business. Because it is Stat Nerd Thursday, as I mentioned, and you know what that means if you've been rocking with us all year, and hopefully you have. It means we give you one stat you need to know. I'm serious about need to know for all 32 teams as you head into the fantasy playoffs, as we head here into week 15. And we do that in the order of the projected 2024 NFL draft, according to Tankathon. And that brings us to, oh boy, as it always does, the Carolina Panthers at the number one overall spot here. Our stat for the Panthers, Jonathan Mingo ranks 10th in the NFL with 255 air yards the last 2 weeks. That's encouraging usage for the rookie. Not so encouraging, though, is that Bryce Young is completing just 41.8% of his passes in this span. You really would love to see your rookie quarterback be getting better as the year goes on. I think you could argue that the longer that Bryce Young plays, the worse that it gets for Carolina.
Yeah, Jonathan Mingo has quietly emerged as Carolina's number one receiver. It hasn't mattered at all in fantasy, but 19 targets over the last 2 weeks. He's third in the NFL in air yardage loss from uncatchable passes when charted with a step or better separation. So that's interesting. I wrote about him in Numbers Do Lie column this week. Mingo, is you kind of want to talk yourself into a really cheap DFS guy, but he has a Bryce Young problem. I mean, it's just bad. And just, he missed him for that wide open 45-yard touchdown last week, we've all seen. And it's just a consistent issue. So his floor is limited. And also, the Panthers have gone, they're running out the season. They've gone in crazy. Their neutral pass rate last week was like by far the lowest in the league. So he has a few things going against him. But it's worth noting he's playing 90% of the snaps, seeing all these targets, getting open on some of them. But Bryce Young is, yeah, minus 21.2 completion percentage over expectation last week. I think it was the second percentile. Just the eye test. Young just consistently missing passes. He had some nice runs last week, admittedly. But boy, it's hard not to be really concerned, no matter the sample size, if you're a Panther fan, with what Bryce Young has done so far.
Yeah, there's no question. And the interesting thing, if you're like a Jonathan Mingo dynasty bro, and I know I said a lot during a prospect run-up that I liked Jonathan Mingo in one role, and it was not the role that they were using him in to start the season. Honestly, it was a lot of like the ways that the Panthers have been using Adam Thielen, like putting him in motion, getting him these designed targets and stuff like that. And if you look at it the last 2 weeks, like his slot route percentage for Jonathan Mingo, it's up to, you know, 37%, which isn't super high, but it's right where you kind of need it to be. He's an off the line flanker guy. They've been using him more like in these intentional bunches and stuff like that. 10% of his targets have been designed targets the last 2 weeks, Jonathan Mingo. But and meanwhile, Adam Thielen has no designed targets so far the last 2 weeks. Like, I think they have looked to the future a little bit more with Jonathan Mingo and kind of like, all right, this is the role we want him in. The problem for Mingo from a dynasty perspective, I mean, a lot of different things here. One, the quarterback play is not good, and it's going to be Bryce Young again next year. Maybe they can salvage that. And two, just like, I don't even know if any of this coaching staff is going to be back next year. Like, I think Thomas Brown might be, obviously Frank Reich's already gone. Thomas Brown might be out the door. You know, Jim Caldwell, like all these guys might be gone. So that's just one note I would have from Mingo from like a long-term perspective. It's actually not, again, this was a player I compared him to from a usage perspective. The role I'd like to see him in is sort of like Amon-Ra St. Brown. And if you look at like St. Brown early in his rookie season in the reception perception rookie report, he was being used on like outside and deep routes. And it was like, what are we doing here? Like, that's not his role. And then we saw that change at the back half of the year. That's probably not going to happen with Mingo, but I think we should at least talk about the possibility that it might happen if just Bryce Young flips a switch, they start pass protecting better. I don't know. Probably not going to happen, but at least, again, we're seeing some encouraging signs from a usage perspective, and I do think those should be noted.
Yeah, and Steve Smith, Mingo was his favorite receiver in the draft too, so he has that going for him. But yeah, at least the usage is there. Now we need a little more accuracy.
Yeah, I talked to Steve Smith about Jonathan Mingo like right after, like when they drafted him, or a little bit after they drafted him, and he was definitely like really interested in him being like a bully ball flanker receiver, which is kind of what he's been so far. But again, just not a lot going right there for the Carolina Panthers. Number two overall team here, New England Patriots. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott, like I've said, we need to put a ban on the term league winner, or like at least let's be a little more more careful and more cautious with the term league winner. I don't know, man. Zeke Elliott might be a fantasy league winner in 2023. Second among all running backs in expected fantasy points, according to Fantasy Points data. He played 91% of the Patriots snaps, hit 88% of the team carries, and had a 28.6% target share, Dalton. I mean, that's outrageous. I'm sure you've gotten the questions. I've been getting the questions about, do I bench like David Montgomery for Ezekiel Elliott or something like that, right? Like, I mean, where is the line for Zeke here in week 15?
Well, he was the number one scoring fantasy back last week, not just number two expected. He was the top scoring fantasy back last week. And this week he gets a Chiefs defense that ranks last in DVOA against the run over the last 5 weeks. Dead last. You know who ranks first over the last 5 weeks? Their opponent, the Patriots. They've just completely stuffed the run.
Yeah.
So Zeke now has this great matchup at home with the backfield all to himself again. Yeah, I mean, he's an obvious top 20 back, top 15 back. I don't think I would start him over Montgomery, but it's totally debatable. So yeah, I mean, you could probably treat him as an RB1, I guess, given that usage and at home against KC, the more I think about it, sure, you could even treat him as an RB1. So does that make him a league winner, given that he just came from out of nowhere? Qualifies, sure. It's crazy, man. He hurt my ranks last week. He wasn't efficient. Didn't matter, man. All that work out of the goal line and the passing game, that's money.
I thought it looked pretty good from what I saw in the pass game, at least. But rushing game, yeah. I don't know. It's definitely, I mean, it's just hilarious. What an outrageous thing. It's not a good offense. Zeke is like, you know, clearly well into the back nine of his career, but he might bring home some fantasy titles.
And Belichick, I don't think you recorded a pod since. Belichick gone, apparently, yeah?
Yeah, it sounds like, according to Tom Curran, who's followed reported on the team forever, that they made that decision after the Germany loss to the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, I get it because, look, he's had better success than any coach in the NFL history, right? Like, I mean, or at least in terms of Super Bowls, the whole thing, like, you built a total dynasty. But I mean, what they did with Mac Jones, and I don't even know if Mac Jones ever would have been good or anything like that. Or look, I don't know if he would have been a true franchise quarterback, but the guy was good in his rookie year. And then like it was complete malpractice what they did around him. Like, if you are the Patriots, and you're going to be picking second in the draft, and you're taking a new franchise quarterback, do you really want Bill Belichick to be in charge of that? And I think what really truly did him in, Dalton, it's the cronyism and the nepotism. Like, just, I mean, he's got two of his sons on the staff. Like, he doesn't hire anybody outside of like guys he knows. I think that is like a lesson to NFL coaches, that not refreshing the ideas. I mean, like, you needed to refresh your offensive coordinator and you just go back to Bill O'Brien. Like, you got to bring in some new blood and some different thought into the building.
A final takeaway for me from the Patriots era is that we had one of the best quarterbacks of all time, maybe the best, and one of the best defensive coordinators running the show combined. That's really what it was. Yeah. You know, I mean, but Belichick has just made so many curious decisions personnel wise and in the draft. It's just hard not to criticize him at this point.
And he's still a good defensive coordinator, like you were just
absolutely
saying.
Absolutely, yeah, totally. They've suffered so many injuries, too. Yeah, and they have a horrible offense, makes it tougher to play defense constantly on the field. You're right, absolutely. He's still probably, yeah, he'll get a ton of offers, right? I mean, just offers, yeah.
I would love to see him just be like a badass defensive coordinator for the next decade or something.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
would be, you know, like Vic Fangio style. He just becomes like the highest paid defensive coordinator, like a total hitman, you know, a mercenary going to all these different defenses, turning them around. But it's not going to happen. Some team will, you know, I mean, we just talked about the Panthers. Also, by the way, just I will move on here because I know it's fantasy playoffs and let's be serious, blah, blah, blah. But it is funny that I just said Bill Belichick, like, was done in by cronyism, nepotism, and just hiring only people he knows. And then the team we just talked about previously, the Carolina Panthers, it sounds like Frank Reich was done in the complete opposite way, that he hired a bunch of people. Like, Dave Tepper was like, you need to hire all these different coaches from all these different backgrounds and blah, 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 blah. I think Charles McDonald made a good point on the Exemplist yesterday that Dave Tepper was like, oh yeah, the 49ers get all these comp picks for all these different coaches they hire. So, but it's like, cause they have good coaches, not just cause they hire a bunch of minority coaches. You have to actually be good. Right. So Dave Tepper does all this stuff. And then they apparently, you know, and it wasn't just like some of these guys, I think the special teams coordinator interim coach is like a big David Tepper guy or whatever. So, and he gets knifed in the back because all these guys were, you know, behind his back and stuff like that. So there's really no way to do it. Be good on the field, and then, you know, none of this stuff really matters.
Did you see the overall trade of what the Panthers have traded, recently? I forget. I don't have it right in front of me.
Not
but
safe
it is
for work.
So bad. Yeah, CMC, DJ Moore, and, like, lower round draft picks and Bryce Young for – you know, a million.
It's truly not safe for work stuff. What the Panthers have given up.
Sorry. CMC Moore and higher draft picks, basic, and Young for lower round draft picks is basically what it was. It's ugly.
Okay. Yeah, I've got it. I had to pull it up. Not safe for work. Like I said, not safe for work. Carolina traded. This is from at Wiley77, Matthew Wiley. The Panthers traded DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey, the 2023 ninth overall pick, the 2023 second rounder, a 2024 the first overall pick, as we're saying, the 2024 second round pick, for Bryce Young, a 2023 second, a 2023 third, a 2023 fourth, and a 2024 fifth. I mean, Scott Fitterer, he shouldn't even be fired. He should be arrested. Okay, he should be arrested in the Carolinas right now.
Yeah, that's one of the worst runs I can remember. Bad.
Yeah. Shout out to tanking and analytics bros. That's what you get yourself when you do stuff like this. All right, enough of that. You know who has been balling on the field lately? Trey McBride, Arizona Cardinals, third overall team here. Trey McBride ranks seventh in target share since week 8. He's behind only Michael Pittman, CeeDee Lamb, Keenan Allen, Devontae Adams, A.J. Brown, Garrett Wilson, and he's one ahead of, in the rankings, Tyreek Hill. So Trey McBride absolutely balling. I'm curious, though, do you have faith in anybody else in this passing attack as the Cardinals come off their bye week to face the San Francisco 49ers?
You're definitely starting Trey McBride, given that usage, regardless of the matchup. But you'd like to not probably start Hollywood Brown coming off that heel injury. He was expected to return to practice this week, but the Niners have the number one pass defense on DVOA over the past 5 weeks. Their pressure rate's through the roof since trading for Chase Young. And the other problem here is using the nerd's favorite EPA plus CPOE composite, Kyler Murray ranks 29th among 30 quarterbacks since returning in that stat. So he's struggled as a passer. So that's not helping there in this situation either. Niners are due for a letdown game at some point. They did give up some points to Seattle. So who knows, you know, playing from behind, does it result in a dozen targets for Hollywood? It's possible, but ideally in the fantasy playoffs, you have an alternative.
Yeah. I think I'm confident that Marquise Brown can get back on track at some point, but I feel like this is not the week to try to
Mooney Ward that. May miss. You see, remember I mentioned last week that he started shadowing. I remembered when it was actually Thanksgiving night against DK, and then he was doing it again at the beginning, but he left immediately with a groin injury. So if he's out this week, and Hargrave may miss this game too. So that you know, couple stars may be missing on SS defense.
Again, from a fantasy perspective, maybe I don't know if you have the stomach to play Hollywood Brown, but maybe you explore like a prop bet type of situation.
But play McBride just because of the usage, even though Niners shut down tight ends. You got to play McBride.
100%. All right, number four overall team, Washington Commanders. Sam Howell has just one passing touchdown to four rushing touchdowns in the last three games. You know, the stats are going around. I think Ian Harditz shared it, and then a bunch of, you know, aggregator bros and the other companies picked it up, that Sam Howell's got more fantasy points than Patrick Mahomes this season, which is true. It's a verifiable fact. I'm still very concerned that, like, the bottom could fall out for Sam Howell at any point if he doesn't have these rushing touchdowns from a fantasy perspective, especially going into LA and, like, Aaron Donald obviously just balling out of control right now.
Yeah, I mean, Howell's been getting it done fantasy wise, but as you pointed out multiple times, you're skeptical of him as their long term answer at quarterback there. Brian Robinson's banged up here. McLaurin is just remains a mystery that he has not been better fantasy with Howell leading the league or close to it with passing yards this year. But yeah.
But like long term aside, what about this week? Do you have any concerns this week that he could again, because of the lack of passing production, like, yo, he doesn't get it done as a rusher from a scoring perspective, that could be a concern if people want to start him this week?
No, I have him as a top 12 fantasy QB. The volume's going to be there indoors. The Rams team are going to absolutely light it up. Can't wait to talk about them. I have Kyren Williams as my number two back. I have Kupp as my top three fantasy receiver this week, and Nakua top 10. I think they're going to score a million points at home. So I think that'll result in some, at worst, garbage time stats for Howell. I'm starting him in fantasy.
Number five overall team, Chicago Bears. Justin Fields among quarterbacks since week 11. He's 12th in EPA per play, but he's still just 26th in success rate. I'm curious, Dalton, where you stand on the Justin Fields stuff. Obviously, probably a fantasy starter, even though it's a tough matchup, right, in Cleveland. I think he's still got to be among your top 12 fantasy quarterbacks this week. But where do you stand on Justin Fields, like, long term? Because I think the Bears are winning games. But I mean, like, are they really at this point, we're just going into Justin Fields next year? I don't know. I think I'm still kind of questioning that.
Yeah, Fields in a few super flex leagues. Obviously, you're starting him in super flex, but it's not an ideal matchup. The Browns are allowing almost a full yard fewer than the next best team at home in yards per play. It's like 3.5 yards per play at home. Although last week they did give up some passing TDs. Justin Fields is just totally different fantasy in real life. He's averaging 14 carries the last 3 weeks. So, I mean, that is just fantasy gold there. From a real life perspective, I wouldn't blame Chicago for drafting either the two, quarterbacks. Number one, coming out, take your pick, Williams or May. So that's where I stand with him. But fantasy wise, he's due for more rushing touchdowns. He only had one on the year before last week. He's just getting a ton of carries. One play on 3rd and 17. He had a 19-yard run, one of the sickest highlights of the week last week. He can make highlight plays with his legs, and he is getting better as a passer. DJ Moore has helped, but there's obvious issues there, and it's been a while. So if you wanted to move on, I wouldn't blame anyone. Quickly, I just wanted to also say that the Bears defense is quietly, quickly, suddenly legit. I mean, they are just completely, they've allowing the fifth fewest passing yards per game since trading for Montez Sweat. Over the last 5 weeks, their pass defense, I said the Niners are number one. Bears are number two. They are just really just completely getting it, surprisingly getting it done. They lead the NFL in takeaways since week 11. They've had a bye. So here's the thing. The weeks you're laughing at me. Week six, the next 2 weeks of the 2 weeks of the fantasy championship, they are at home against Arizona against the aforementioned struggling Kyler Murray, and then at home against the Falcons. Desmond Ridder has 20 sacks and 2 touchdown passes over 6 games on the road. So I quietly picked up the Bears defense for free in all my Yahoo leagues on Tuesday night and stashing them for week 16 and 17. What do you think about that?
No, dude, the Bears defense is legit. And you don't even have to do this since Montez Sweat arrived or anything. Like, really, since the first month of the season where, ironically, they had all that, like, drama with the defensive coordinator and stuff. This has just been a straight-up good defense. I don't know if that's enough for Matt Eberflus to keep his job, but it's a legit good defense.
Although they did just lose their defensive end, I'm not going to be able to say his name, Ngakoue.
Yannick Ngakoue, yeah.
Yeah, that's a blow. But they've impressed, and like I said, fantastic quiet matchups in the two most important weeks of the fantasy playoffs.
Number six overall team, Las Vegas Raiders. We're skipping them for Thursday Night Football. Number seven, New York Jets, Zach Wilson, the AFC Player of the Week, baby. Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall combined for 64% of the targets in week 14. But I ask you, Dalton, playing in Miami against a pissed off Dolphins team coming off a tough loss, any concerns about Garrett Wilson and or Breece Hall? Obviously, that might have been a fluke with Zach Wilson last week.
Yeah, this just depends on your alternatives for Garrett Wilson, but you love the targets. And it's clear that Zach Wilson is an upgrade over Boyle and Simeon.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that much is clear. So, and he's peppering the guys we want with targets. So I'm playing Breece Hall. I hear you that the Dolphins defense may bounce back here, but that Dolphins off team in general is got some
trouble.
Issues and some offensive. Yeah, they're in trouble. So I actually wouldn't be surprised if this game's very competitive. So I'm starting Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall in most cases. Oh, assuming Zach Wilson's okay. He's banged up.
I said that Zach Wilson was the AFC player of the week, the NFC player of the week. I mean, look, Dalton, take your victory lap. Your guy, Tommy DeVito, Tommy Cutlets. This one comes in from Seth Walder of ESPN Analytics. Tommy DeVito led all quarterbacks in QBR in week 14 with 82. And if you're like, whoa, look at the passing yards. We're like, nothing. He had 10 for 71 as a rusher. No sacks taken, which QBR rightly takes into account. And he had been getting obliterated with sacks. But, man, I mean, I'll tell you what, Dalton, watching Tommy DeVito, for one, the story is amazing. It's hilarious. Like, I mean, the whole thing is just so fun. Guy can play a little bit. I don't know that he's going to be, like, their future quarterback or anything. But I was wrong in questioning, Tommy DeVito, especially because of the rushing, like I said. We have, and it makes me curious about Easton Stick, who we'll talk about later with, as Austin told us yesterday, like, Stick can scoot. These backups who can come in and give life to an offense as a rusher, I really do think that matters a lot.
Giants have won three straight. DeVito scored a touchdown at one of his 26-yard run. They didn't bother challenging it because it was first and goal and Barkley got his second one, but he totally scored on that play. We need more shots of his agent. I don't know if you saw any
yeah,
it was a bit of sarcasm there. Wandell Robinson outshined my guy Jalen Hyatt. Man, sad to see in prime time, but it was another nice performance by Tommy Cutlets. I've been riding him in a couple super flex leagues, and a tougher matchup against New Orleans teams, tough in the red zone. But yeah, he's been fun to watch. Cool story. And the fantasy juice with his legs is actually the quiet story there. Yeah. And as you said, Stick could be similar.
Saved Saquon Barkley, I would argue, from like a fantasy perspective, man. I mean, I thought Saquon 100%. Was DOA, you know, at this point in the season, but it's been good. And I mean, Wandell Robinson, I don't know how much I'm chasing it in fantasy, but no. Like, he was running some real big boy routes. Down and like, he's more, mostly yeah. been like a Mickey Mouse pop gun slot receiver. So that at least encourages me, and like, I'm interested in it long-term for the future. All right, number 9 overall team here, Tennessee Titans. Will Levis is fourth among quarterbacks with 100-plus passes in deep throw rate since week 11. This guy, Will Levis, he's a psychopath. I mean, he's a whack job. And I mean that, and I say this in a very complimentary way. I mean, he looks like a jacked Jay Cutler out there. I mean, maybe, you know, people in the draft process said he was too jacked, right? Remember, that was the whole thing. But, I mean, man, the guy, you gotta respect how he plays. I mean, he needs to probably chill out. Again, talk about reviving a veteran. Like, he has definitely revived DeAndre Hopkins, even if they weren't always on the same page last week.
Oh, yeah, some impressive plays during that comeback, slinging it downfield. Definitely a fun player to watch. Always love talking about my guy, Jay Cutler. I just want to say Derrick Henry has 6 touchdowns the last 3 weeks. So fortunate to get 2 scores Monday night, and he was shut down otherwise. But the script has flipped this week against the Texans. You know, they're so banged up. Titans are 4-1 in Tennessee this year and favorites. You know, he has these big splits, even though he did get the 2 touchdowns and they were big underdogs against the Dolphins. But my point is, Derrick Henry's a DFS option this week in Yahoo. He's a $29 salary. They're at home, favorites. Houston does not have a bad run defense, but that's a reeling team with a million injuries. If Stroud doesn't play, I mean, that and with Levis looking good, that could be a nice game script for the big dog.
Yeah, so Mike Vrabel after the game said, "We're still working with Will Levis." This is from Jim Wyatt, the team reporter. "We're still working with Will Levis on avoiding / taking hits. We've previously shown him tape of quarterback sliding. Now, Mike Vrabel thinks maybe I guess we'll just have to show him videos of quarterbacks not sliding, getting the beat out of them." So, I mean, that is how Will Levis plays. So, hey, we'll see if he can last playing like that. But I agree with you, hair on fire type of moment for Will Levis. That this could be an upset here with that Texans game. That's a really good call.
You know, Harmon, I probably never even told you this story, but I got married in Honolulu and we happened to go watch the Pro Bowl. It was during the same week. And the day after the Pro Bowl, we were flying
home. Shout out to your wife.
We were flying home, and Jay Cutler played in the game. And a kid came up from behind me and was convinced I was Jay Cutler. I know I don't look anything like him now. At one point, I did. I might have even been wearing a Broncos jersey, his jersey, which is hilarious. Like, the real Jay Cutler would be wearing his own jersey. But this kid was convinced and was shaking, like asking me. And I said, "I'm not him." And I turned around. And after I told him I wasn't him, I saw him walk away. But he was still on his phone, like pointing. So I'm like, dude, the guy thinks Jay Cutler just rejected his autograph. Like, he was convinced it was me, it was him. So I should have just signed the autograph. It would have given him a better story. But that's why I always say my guy Cutler. I also overdrafted him and loved him too. But back in the day, yes, at one point I was asked for an autograph. Someone thought I was Cutler.
Dude, that is amazing.
I
wish there was like video of that.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, this is 2009, I think. Yeah. Should know when I got married, right?
Yeah, you should definitely know that.
My 15-year anniversary is coming up. So yeah, 2009.
Okay, yeah. Good thing you know that. Also, shout out to your wife for going to the freaking Pro Bowl after you got married.
No, she's into fantasy. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, I had to marry her. Found someone into sports like me.
Good call by you, pal. But I want to see a picture of what you looked like then, because I can't imagine you looking like Jay Cutler.
I know. I had a few more pounds back then, but it was pretty funny. It's pretty funny. But all right, where were we? Sorry to sidetrack us.
No idea. I'll say Jay Cutler's a fine looking guy, man. You know, you should take that as a compliment. Anyways, all right.
Married a pretty wife.
Number 10, LA Chargers, skipping them for Thursday Night Football. Number 11, Atlanta Falcons. The Falcons have a 2% drop back over expectation rate in week 14. That is the second highest of the season per Fantasy Life utilization data. Awesome stuff. The results were great, right? But I'm a little concerned that was just a 1 week blip because of the matchup with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and we will not see that type of passing volume for guys like Pitts and London here in week 15.
Well, yeah, the Falcons have a 35% drop back rate when trailing this season. Mm. So yeah, they've been very, very extreme, run heavy. The big news here with the Falcons is Bijan Robinson has taken over the goal line role since the bye. It's as simple as that. Last week, he even had a drive in which he had three opportunities inside the 10, didn't end up scoring. I felt like he could have scored in the second run himself, but the third one, Ridder just badly missed him. He ended up punching another one in later from the goal line. So man, him securing that role is huge this week against Carolina. The Panthers allow the third fewest fantasy points to quarterbacks, but the third most to running backs, and they allow the fifth most rush attempts per game. So expect a really nice day for Bijan. I ranked him as a top three back this week.
Yeah, 100%. I love that. I think it's going to be a
Drake London. Sorry, dude. I had him in DFS last week. What an experience. What a baller, man. He, as I said, fantasy managers would love the Drake if you were on a different team, dude. If you were just on a different team, he would be a superstar, not just a star, maybe even a superstar, because he looked like one last week downfield. Those plays he was making, incredible.
That guy is a straight up baller. Yeah, I mean, there's no reason if the situation was different that Drake London couldn't be like a top 12 fantasy receiver, and maybe like a top 12 real life receiver. I mean, I know it's a crowded field, a wide receiver, and you know, you throw these numbers around, whatever you know. But still, I mean, he's so, so good. There's no reason to think he couldn't be just absolutely balling out of control in a different situation. We'll see. Maybe, look, I think if the Falcons don't make the playoffs and they're in the damn 11th overall spot here, I think maybe not offensive coaching changes. I don't even know that Arthur Smith like needs to get fired or anything like that, but they definitely need to, you know, again, shout out to Charles McDonald on the Zero Blitz podcast and the Exemplist and everything. Like, he made the point, these guys are all so young when you think about it. Like, these are literal children running an NFL offense. These guys are all so young. So I think different quarterback play would just be the thing that Atlanta needs going forward. But talk about different quarterback play. Good Lord. Number 12 overall team, New Orleans Saints. Derek Carr's 3.89 adjusted net yards per attempt in week 14 was the second lowest of the season. His lowest came in the Bucs game earlier in the season, where he also came back way too early from injury. I mean, Greg Rosenthal, NFL Network, had a tweet where he's like, Saints versus Giants is going to be an all-time, like, how much do vibes really matter here? Because the vibes are super high with the Giants and Tommy Cutlets. They could not be any worse. They cannot be any farther on the other end with the Saints and Derek Carr right now. So I don't know. What's your kind of read on this potential matchup here in week 15 with the Giants?
I'm curious how much Carr is hurting the Saints playing through, he said, his third fractured rib of the season. So like, props to him playing through, you know, multiple concussions a few days later and all that. Tough guy. But, the alternative is Winston. It could be a lot more turnovers and could be worse for the Saints. But either way, it looks like Carr's playing through the injury. Normally, I'd like fading the Giants team coming off three straight wins, you know, a road game on Monday night, you know, road game following a Monday night. But boy, I'm not laying 6 points if I'm New Orleans here. I mean, on New Orleans, they're not great at home. And yeah, Carr's playing the way he is. I expect that game to be competitive. So yeah, it's a good point as far as vibes. But yeah, Derek Carr's throwing to his left tackle, screaming at his center or whoever the other guard was.
Yeah, and it's McCoy, not. It, yeah.
And he's like the nicest guy in the interviews too. I'm like, what's happening?
Yeah, people hate him.
Apparently,
fans hate him. Teammates hate him.
Maybe it's an act in the interview.
That's probably what it is. It's probably an act, I would imagine. All right. Number 13 overall team, Seattle Seahawks. Zach Charbonnet led the backfield in carries with 9 last week. Kenneth Walker led the backfield with a 16% target share, which is like the exact opposite of what you'd expect it to be, right? But I'm curious how you feel about these two backs heading into this matchup this week.
I don't like either of them against the Eagles. That's a total pass funnel defense that's tough against the run, but giving up the first or second most fantasy points to quarterbacks. So I'm curious who starts. You know, Geno Smith or Locke. Locke totally looked better than I expected last week, capable. But whomever starts at quarterback, I have DK Metcalf as a top 10 fantasy wideout this week, and I moved Lockett borderline top 25, JSN, you know, a wide receiver 3. Bumping up the passing game, regardless of who's playing quarterback. I think Seattle's a live dog at home. They've lost 4 straight against, but they're playing far better than it looks. Witherspoon is expected to return. So I'm taking the points there against the Eagles, and I'm starting all passing components of Seattle, but I don't really want to split work, you know, backfield against the Eagles. I try to avoid Walker and Charbonnet.
Yep, man. It's a tough one. I love your call about the passing game. I hope DK Metcalf can like stay in the game and not try to beat people up. That would be awesome because I think he needs to maybe relax a little bit. But yeah, no, I think that's really. Did you see how apparently the 49ers, like, and Kyle Shanahan said he was.
Yes.
They're like, no, they can get in DK Metcalf's head and like get him thrown out of the game. And it worked.
Yes, I think he offered a gift or something. But yeah, it was a little unnecessary at the time. The game was over. But yeah, it worked. Yeah, there's some animosity there.
Number 14 overall team, you mentioned you're excited about them. I am too. Los Angeles Rams. Matthew Stafford leads the league with 10 touchdown passes over the last 3 weeks. And remember, earlier in the season, we're like, the passing production is not really, the fantasy production isn't there. He's not throwing touchdowns at a high rate. Well, the positive regression has fully hit for Stafford. I really hope. Look, I know you're excited about this matchup and you can talk about it. I'm excited too. I just want to see this team in the playoffs, man.
Yeah, they really have flipped the switch. They're seemingly all healthy now. I mean, I kind of was down on Cooper Kupp, admittedly, last week in Baltimore. I mean, he had averaged 27.7 receiving yards and 5.3 fantasy points over his previous 6 games. But he not only produced, he looked great doing it. I mean, it helped those amazing anticipatory Stafford throws. But this week, they're at home. The Commanders have allowed the most EPA per pass, the most schedule-adjusted fantasy points to the slot, where Kupp runs 50% of his routes this year. Here's a fun stat, Hayden Winks. The Rams have the highest wide receiver fantasy usage over the last month and the highest running back fantasy usage over the last month. Just money for fantasy.
Amazing.
Like I said, I have Kyren Williams as my number 2 back this week, and I ranked Kupp number 3. I think his ECR is like 20 or something. Am I crazy to just, am I overranking just 1 week, or is this setup too good and he looks healthy again? And what's the deal here? Let's just go back to him. Only $25 in Yahoo DFS. I wrote him up. Like, that's way underpriced.
I think we are just back to, I think we're back to Kupp, and I think we should be back to Kupp. To me, look, I think obviously he was not showing well as a player, but like I always say with these type of guys, like, that can flip on a dime, you know, when we know they're good. And the fact that he was getting legit downfield usage against the Ravens, I thought was very encouraging.
And to be clear, I have Puka as a top 15 receiver.
Oh, for sure.
Too. So like he's, yeah, they're both must starts, and Stafford top five QB.
Love it. All right. Number 15 overall team, Denver Broncos. The Broncos are the 4th best defense in EPA per play allowed since week 4, where they famously got trounced for 70 points. And I think this matters because it's just like the offense is just not the most important side of the ball for Denver. You know, they're a defense heavy team. Sean Payton's coaching this team really well at this point. And it's just basically like hero balls to Cortland Sutton and kind of a committee at running back.
Yeah, first 4 games, the Broncos defense allowed 9.5 yards per attempt, 10.2 TD rate. Last 9 games, 6.8 YPA, 2.3% TD rate. So big improvement there. They can still get beat on the ground. You know, Detroit at home and Saturday, I like both running backs there. But yeah, what an improvement for the Broncos.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's good to see for them. Wish they could get something going else going in the pass game beyond just Courtland Sutton. But Sutton's balling, man. He's playing
Dude,
such good football.
One-handed catches like they're nothing. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, he's finally looking good after that ACL tear in 2019. I think this is the best he's looked in a long time. Number 16, Houston Texans. Texans routes run in week 14. Nico Collins left the game after just one route. Robert Woods, 25. Noah Brown, 24. Brevin Jordan, 24. Xavier Hutchinson, 22. John Mechie, 15. The running backs, Devin Singletary, 12. Dare Ogunbowale, 11.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything here?
Anything
to get excited
hope
about.
CJ Stroud's okay. He hit his head back on the back of the field, his helmet pretty hard on the field there, the turf. Hopefully he's okay. I could talk myself into Noah Brown, even though he's playing through a knee injury and he's clearly not as good as Nico Collins or Tank Dell. But if Stroud were healthy, and obviously assuming Collins is out, against the pass funnel Titans defense, you could talk yourself in. Yeah, it sounds like strength. Yeah. And against a pass funnel Titans defense, you could talk yourself into Noah Brown in certain situations, but you need Stroud for that. I mean, Detective Mills, my guy, Detective Davis Mills, he came in, immediately missed a wide open John Mechie for a 70-yard touchdown. Wide, wide open. It was ugly stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly stuff. I mean, that's just it's a reminder of what Stroud's been doing there and what Collins and Dell have been doing there. That, you know, as soon as these guys all start missing time, this looks like a broken passing game. All right, number 17 overall team, Buffalo Bills. James Cook is second on the Bills with 169 receiving yards since Joe Brady took over as the offensive coordinator. He's been targeted on 36% of his routes in that span.
Yeah, Cook has not seen a snap rate higher than 46% during any of those three games under Brady, but whatever. He's been a big fantasy help regardless. He's averaged 114 yards from scrimmage, 19.7 opportunities, and the sixth most fantasy points over that span. Still doesn't have a role at the goal line, but that target per route run rate, as you stated, is absolutely elite. Yeah, I think he can be a top 12 fantasy back down the stretch, even with limited snaps and goal line work, if he's going to see 20 opportunities on a top five offense. Harmon, I quickly want to ask you, Gabe Davis, our favorite wide receiver, against a real man heavy defense this week, Dallas, that's a week to avoid him especially, right?
I would think so, but man, Gabe Davis is literally on a hilarious stretch right now. When you just look at his straight up box score, I mean, his last six games go 9 catches, 87 yards, touchdown, 0, 2, 56, 0, 6, 105, touchdown, 0. Like, he's caught 0 passes in 3 of his last 6 games. Like, this is the ultimate Gabe Davis experience. I mean, even the game before the 87 yarder that I mentioned just that started all this off, he had 1 catch for 6 yards against the Patriots. Like, Gabe Davis is Gabe Davis-ing extremely hard to start this or to end the season, which is pretty funny because he was kind of like a consistent fantasy producer. I mean, he is what he is. Like, this is no surprise. But I cannot imagine that. I mean, Stephon Gilmore, I think, played a good game last week. I can't imagine this is going to be a successful spot to chase Gabe Davis, unless the every other week trend really is the one to follow.
Gabe Davis posted 5 weeks as a top 15 fantasy wide receiver and 6 outside the top 65. So that is pretty feast or famine. Yeah, his numbers are not good against man, but I could just see game script calling for him getting a ton here. And you know, Diggs has a tougher matchup. We'll see. I know the matchup on paper, he's historically not been great against man.
Yeah, no, he hasn't. I would say too, if this feels like a game that, you know, Steph Diggs gets right. I mean, they just can't have him having these 24-yard games.
100%.
And that's a secondary that has been cooked by, like, good route runners and good separators, you know? I mean, even there were plays for the Eagles receivers to make that, you know, they dropped or, you know, Jalen Hurts missed by a couple inches. So,
yeah, they missed Josh Diggs. Allen, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they definitely missed Trayvon Diggs on the other side of it. Too bad we don't get the Diggs matchup here.
Sorry to confuse you there with the Diggs.
No.
I like that call out a lot. I think Stephon Diggs could erupt for a big one. Boy, it's been a disappointing last run here. It's been 6 weeks or whatever. It's been really disappointing.
Yeah, but I think a lot of it comes back to they're trying to find other ways to get this offense going.
Average 53.3 yards over the last 7 games.
Yeah, I think the James Cook stuff, like being intentional about getting him the ball, has been actually a nice counterpunch to the whole Steph Diggs side of the offense. By the way, just one quick thing, because we talked about like missing wide open receivers. There was one play, and Bill, a lot of Bills fans have highlighted it, where Joe Brady, who I think they say has done, and I think this is probably true, has done a better job of scheming guys open instead of just like, all right, like line up and play, go get it, go get a bucket, which Diggs can do, but nobody else on this offense can really do consistently. Gabe Davis was like running wide open on one of these plays against the Chiefs down the field, and he would have scored like, you know, a massive touchdown. We wouldn't be talking about a 0 point game, but Josh Allen just didn't see him through the ball to, I think, Dalton Kincaid on the sideline. So it's funny. That's how the game works sometimes when we're just looking at the results. All right. Number 18 overall team, Cincinnati Bengals. Chase Brown and Joe Mixon have 80 and 79 yards on screen passes since week 13, the last 2 weeks. And I think these guys are going to be big involved in the screen game this week too, right? The Vikings blitz a ton. They blitz more than anybody else in the NFL. Brian Flores, that's his thing. And we saw the Bears try to beat like the Vikings with a bunch of wide receiver screens. But I think actually running back screens could be pretty crucial for this offense against the Vikings on Saturday.
Jake Browning, man, he's been the QB4 over the last 2 weeks, but he's really benefited from some luck here. He's had two goal line touchdowns after Joe Mixon was stopped at the 1-3 times. And you mentioned it here. This is the craziness, man. Do you know that Browning already has the most passing yards on backfield screens among all quarterbacks this season? So, I mean, the YPA is benefiting from Chase Brown. I mean, I don't think Mixon would have taken that one to the house like that. Impressive rookie did. Browning's air yards per attempt would rank last in the league by a country mile, by like two full yards or something if he qualified. So he's been definitely proven to be a capable backup. Dude threw 91 touchdowns in his senior year in high school. Love the story. He's kept the fantasy values afloat of Mixon and Chase for the time being. But yeah, his schedule was incredibly favorable recently, and now it's much more difficult. The Vikings have been awesome defensively, and over the last month, Pat Thorman points out, Vikings games have averaged the sixth fewest combined plays and points. So it's the Vikings have allowed just one opponent to hit their implied team total over their last 10 games. Lord Reeves tweets. So yeah, it's a bad matchup for Browning. I could see the fairy tale run here come to an end.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated to watch that game and see what happens. I think that's going to, I mean, it could be kind of ugly, but I'm at least interested to see what the results are for the Bengals offense, because I think you're right. It's a pretty good proving ground. I've been impressed with what they've done with Browning and changing the offense up, but that's definitely a big proving ground moment for these guys this week. Number 19 overall team, Green Bay Packers. Jordan Love's 15.7% off target rate ranked 22nd among quarterbacks last week, according to Fantasy Points data. I included this one because watching that game was like, man, Jordan Love's missing a lot. The accuracy is not good. And there were definitely obviously some real crucial missed opportunities. But to me, I think like Jordan Love had just been ticking up, 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 kind of that linear progression. But we always talk about like, progression is not linear. It's a great phrase. You know, it's the truth. And that's what we saw with Jordan Love, like hit a stumbling block. This whole offense really, I think, hit a stumbling block where everybody kind of underperformed expectations, some receiver mistakes. I mean, I think Matt LaFleur, like, yo, I love Jaden Reed, but we don't need to do all those like behind the line of scrimmage rush attempt stuff with Jaden Reed. Like let's not do that too much. Okay. So I don't know. I don't feel that bad about the Packers offense, even though that was a brutal loss that they could not afford.
And for what it's worth, the Giants have the 7th best pass defense, according to DVOA, over the last 5 weeks. I mean, I know everyone thinks they're this bad team, but their defense really isn't that bad. And now they have a competent quarterback play. And Love was due for an off game. No Christian Watson. I'm not too worried about him. Now he'll bounce back at home against a pass funnel Tampa Bay defense dealing with injuries. So I expect him, like I said, to rebound this week.
Yeah, and we can just loop this right into our next stat here, because they play the Bucs, who are our 20th overall team. The Bucs allow the second highest fantasy points per dropback in zone coverage, according to Fantasy Points data on the season. And this is just a pass funnel defense that's been shredded of late. And I'm with you. I think that this game could be interesting from a fantasy perspective, because, God, that Packers defense is just so frustrating to watch. They just same mistakes every single year, same stuff. I mean, how do you not know that Tommy DeVito is going to take off and run on you when he just keeps doing it? Really frustrating defense on that side of it too. And you know, the Bucs are kind of a herky jerky, you know, offense as well. So, but I think Jordan Love and crew bounce back against this defense.
Yeah, absolutely. The Tampa Bay's defense, like I said, dealing with injuries. And also, speaking of bouncing back, expect Mike Evans. Ooh, somehow he didn't get that touchdown last week in the end zone. But coming off a rare down game for him, J.R. Alexander banged up. Even if he returns, that's a beatable defense. So like Evans for a big bounce back.
Number 21 overall team, Indianapolis Colts. I tweeted this earlier today. The Colts lead the NFL with 44 RPO dropbacks. Michael Pittman is the wide receiver 11 in fantasy. He's on pace for 124 catches and 1,286 yards. Good coaching matters. You know, I gave a shout out to late round quarterback J.J. Zacharyson and Ben Gretsch, two of the best. I mean, you guys should be following all their work, of course. I wrote my fantasy draft day blueprint this year in the My Guys at Wide Receiver section about how JJ and Ben's research on how RPO heavy offenses funnel targets to the first read. And when you have like a clear alpha receiver, which, you know, reception perception has shown that Pittman is that clear alpha receiver, right? He's that good as a separator. They can get pummeled with targets. And like that, I was going to be ahead of consensus on Pittman because I'm a big Pittman fan and he's been one of the best picks you could make this year, but their research was a big part of cementing that. And I think this is something for the future, like looking at, when we see a change in offensive coordinator like that, or, you know, anything, I mean, it can be a huge difference maker for these receivers in these run heavy offenses. Like, I think people overanalyze the Colts being super run heavy way too much. I didn't jive with that. My projections didn't jive with that, but this was a big part of the reason why Pittman's been able to outkick expectations. JJ even chimed in and said, like, you could argue that DJ Moore is another reason why you should really pay attention to this because we do this in the offseason, like, I can't project pass attempts for this offense, blah, blah, blah. And sometimes it doesn't work out, right? Like Atlanta, I mean, it hasn't really worked out there. But for Pittman and Moore, this type of stuff has been huge for these guys, way out kicking their ADP.
Yeah, so first off, the results are what they are. So you were right. I was wrong. Pittman smashed this year in fantasy. But I would counter for fools like myself who did not rank him super high entering the year. And I fully took into account both your grading and high opinion of him and the RPO stuff. I will counter and say Pittman was not a top 35 fantasy wide receiver in 3 of the 4 weeks he played with Anthony Richardson. And that was my theory of why I wanted to avoid. I was all in on AR. Don't get me wrong. Guy's going to run. He would have been a top 3 fantasy QB this year, I'm convinced, if he stayed healthy. And Pittman would have suffered. You guys who ranked him high and drafted him benefited from the Minshew replacing him. But either way, like I said, the results are what they are, and he would have still probably been fine. He was targeted heavily, and he had another, in one of those weeks I conveniently left out, he was top 10, but another, he wasn't top 60, and he wasn't nearly the fantasy receiver he was with Minshew.
The only thing is, like, the sample with Richardson is so small because not only did he only play a few games, he didn't finish, like, what, 2 of those games? So it's weird, right? And, I mean, even in week one,
a lot of targets, I know.
Pittman went off. That was where he stood. He didn't even finish that game, but he had 37 pass attempts. So I don't know. I think that, by the way, Gardner Minshew hasn't been good. Like, that's another thing, too. I mean, who knows how good Richardson would have been. But,
Pittman's an alpha. Should have been on him regardless of the quarterback situation. Good call.
But you're right. Things could look different. I mean, things could definitely have looked different if Richardson stayed in there, and they could be more run heavy. But, man, and just again, shout out to Shane Steichen, who I think is a great coach. And I will definitely be thinking about this in the offseason, like I said, it doesn't work 100%. I mean, I probably would have made the same argument with the Falcons, and it hasn't worked out for Drake London, because those guys have been as run heavy as many people feared. So I don't know. It's just one of those things I'm definitely taking into account in the future.
Sure.
Can't wait to see how much Michael Pittman gets paid in the offseason. That guy is a baller, though.
All the slants, right? He just runs slant after slant. Yeah.
I saw Pro Football Focus. Pro Football Focus came out with like their free agent rankings already for next year, and they have like player, like free agent comparisons. And they compared him to like Allen Robinson the year he was franchise tagged by the Bears, where like he was coming off a 100 catch season or something like that. And he was in that offense running a lot of these same like crossing routes and slants and stuff like that. Obviously, we know at his prime, A-Rob could like catch downfield contested passes too, which I think Michael Pittman can do as well. I actually thought that was a great comparison because he'll be super productive on those routes. But like these guys can be vertical threats. Obviously, Robinson is not that player anymore, but like at his prime, he was that type of guy. And I think Pittman could be as well. That was a good comparison, I thought.
Pittman's due for more touchdowns too. He's got so many targets. Yes, he's not totally used inside the 10, but he's due to score more.
yeah, hopefully we get some touchdowns down the stretch for Michael Pittman, mostly for my fantasy teams. That's really what I'm concerned about here. Number 22 overall team, Minnesota Vikings, Ty Chandler, season high, 56% of the snaps in week 14. He tied his previous season high with 15 touches. Obviously, Alexander Mattison injured in this game, maybe doesn't play. Sounds like Justin Jefferson said today he is going to play against the Cincinnati Bengals, which is good news for anyone that you're considering starting from this offense, potentially including Ty Chandler.
Yeah, I don't have much to say other than to pay attention to the injuries of Madison and Jefferson. Nick Mullins getting the start. He had
he's back.
Exactly, yeah, totally. More passing yards in two drives than Dobbs had the entire game after he came in. So, yeah, it's no surprise that he was named the starter. Mullins, let's go.
Mullins mania, man. Your guy, he's back. We'll see what that amounts to this week. Number 23 overall team, Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers rushing yards from weeks 9 to 14. 166, 205, 172, 153, 130, 82 against Patriots. You mentioned they're a great run defense, but am I right to be concerned that, I mean, Mitch Trubisky's terrible, Mason Rudolph, the fans are clamoring for Mason Rudolph, which, you know, I mean, come on, outrageous, have some self-respect. But still, am I worried that, like, am I right to be worried that we know the passing game is going to be very hit or miss. I mean, George Pickens with the most outrageous next-gen route chart you've ever seen last week. We know that's going to be, you know, a little hit and miss, but is the run game now going to start to suffer as this offense maybe withers down the stretch?
Yeah, certainly not ideal, but that's a vulnerable Colts run defense. So I think you could use both. I rank both Harris and Warren as borderline top 25 fantasy backs this week. Broderick Jones, the numbers of running behind him, man, it's just been beastly. But now I think they want to hide their quarterback and rely on Harris and Warren. And you know, you don't love it. The ceilings are limited, but I think they'll both finish as top 30 backs.
Number 24 overall team, Cleveland Browns. Their two season-high drop-back over expectation rates, according to Fantasy Life's utilization data, the last 2 weeks, 5% and 7% with Joe Flacco. They trust Flacco to run that offense so much, and it's clear why. He is getting the most out of these playmakers, and they continue to suffer injuries, too. Offensive line and defensive injuries, it could be putting them in more passing situations going forward.
Yeah, I don't think it's crazy to say that Flacco gives this team more upside than even what we were seeing as Deshaun Watson. We can burn my AFC Texans ticket, and I'll give you another one here. I don't hate the Browns at around 20-1 to win a wide open AFC there. I mean, I'd say who are the top teams AFC right now? The Ravens and then the Bills. Is that probably where we're at? And then, I mean, you could argue
Bills might not even make the playoffs.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And then, I mean, there's some flaws there. The Browns are again 3.5 yards per play at home. They have to travel on the road in the playoffs, but their defense has played very well on the road as well. I mean, Flacco throwing downfield with Cooper, Elijah Moore, and Njoku, and a strong defense and coaching. I mean, crazier things have happened. Flacco had one of the five best postseason runs by a quarterback in NFL history at one point in his career. So again, I don't think they'd beat an NFC team, but I think at 20-1, they're not a horrible long shot with that defense. But the offensive line is definitely an issue.
Definitely an issue that, you know, they just lost their right tackle, Jones from Ohio State. Like, he was a big mauler there. He was replacing Jack Conklin. I mean, it was already an injury ridden spot there. So that's obviously concerning with Joe Flacco. Like, maybe the gas runs out on this. But how crazy would that be if Joe Flacco is making a big playoff run with the Cleveland Browns of all teams after his Ravens days? That's pretty wild. I'm a sucker for the story. I really do love it. But I'm with you, man. Not only is it easy to say, like, he's the best quarterback that's played for them this year, they call, like I just said, the stat there, they call plays like they trust Joe Flacco way more than they trust Deshaun Watson. And I remember when they traded for Deshaun Watson, the whole thing, like Kevin Stefanski in the press conference is like, you know, I was showing Deshaun like plays of my offense and like how, you know, we think he can fit in and how like it can be better for his career. And it's just been so clear, regardless of Watson, like what level of play he's at, he doesn't fit the offense at all. But Flacco's just running the offense and showing that there are these legit playmakers on this team. It's wild, man. But it is what it is. I think it's
I'm
hard
convinced
to
he could have done it with the Jets. I'll be saying the same thing right now about the Jets if Flacco had gone there.
I do think that Kevin Stefanski, much better offensive coach than Nate Hackett. But I'm with you.
That's fair.
That's definitely true. I think Garrett Wilson could be in a pretty good spot if Joe Flacco was the quarterback there. All right, one of those AFC teams, it's pretty problematic, you mentioned here. Number 25, Kansas City Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes has had his second and third lowest fantasy points the last 2 weeks. His 4.7% touchdown rate is the lowest of his career. He's averaged 6.5% from 2018 to 2022. And like, look, man, this just, it is what it is. It's not changing. So my question to you in the fantasy playoffs, man, how confident are you starting Patrick Mahomes? I mean, starting this week against the Patriots, going to New England, it's not like the softest, cushiest landing spot. Like, where is Patrick Mahomes going to sit in your weekly rankings the next 3 weeks?
Yeah, I'm not confident at all. I still kept him as a top 10 fantasy QB. His ECR is number 6, but I have him a little bit lower at 8. I have guys like Purdy and Stafford and maybe even Goff ahead of him this week. Well, at home, he's so much different, but yeah. Denver defense has been playing better. Mahomes failed to finish as a top 10 fantasy QB in 5 of his last 6 games. Hasn't been top 5 since week 7. Patriots, much tougher against the run, but yeah, tougher matchup there in New England. So just depends on your alternatives. You don't have to start your studs no matter what in this situation. Like I say, Stafford, Purdy, I'd strongly consider starting them over Mahomes.
Yeah, Stafford, I like that call a lot. All right, number 26 overall team. Honestly, it's going to be the same question here. The stat for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Trevor Lawrence had the 6th highest turnover-worthy play percentage in week 14, according to fantasy points data. Here are the quarterbacks that were ahead of him. Drew Lock, CJ Stroud, Easton Stick, Desmond Ridder, and Bailey Zappi. Not exactly great company for Trevor Lawrence to be keeping there, and he threw 3 interceptions. I think he shouldn't be out there playing in that game against the Browns and their defense. And like, they have good corners. They have a good pass rush. Like, they were just completely, I don't think the offense was going to thrive there no matter what, but with Trevor Lawrence playing like that and in that condition, they're definitely not going to thrive. So now he's going against the Baltimore Ravens. How confident are you starting Trevor Lawrence in week 15, much less the next couple of weeks?
First off, props to Lawrence for playing through a high ankle sprain he suffered that Monday night. He threw 3 picks, but he also threw 3 touchdowns against the defense have been by far the toughest in Cleveland while playing with his 3rd string left tackle. So definitely some props there, but I do not feel confident at all this week against the Ravens. Where do I have Lawrence ranked? Yeah, I have him as a non-start. I have him around QB 15 this week. So yeah, you don't want to play him. That ankle's still going to be an issue and it's a tougher matchup. I'd hope we have some alternatives there in your first week of the fantasy playoffs.
So let me just pull on that thread just a little bit because, and look, I mean, it's opinion based and whatever, but, and I'm with you that like these guys play through injuries. It's obviously impressive. And like, I mean, shoot, if I had a high ankle sprain, I would not be out there playing damn football. Okay. I mean, if you had to start me at your quarterback spot anyways, you'd be banged, but regardless, like, I get it. Props to Trevor Lawrence for playing that game. But, like, also, should we kind of not push back at that idea? Because, like, I think he hurt the team by playing there. I mean, we talked about Derek Carr definitely hurting. I mean, he's not good anyways, so whatever. But he's not Trevor Lawrence, that's for sure. But, like, when we're seeing – and the Bengals with Joe Burrow, like, they were so desperate to play him early in the year. And, like, look what Jake Browning has done. Like, they've gotten – whether he continues this stretch or not, but, like, they've gotten through a stretch here with him. I don't know. I'm almost like – I feel like in fantasy, our instinct is, okay, shoot, well, Trevor Lawrence is out there. Like, I just got to go ahead and play these guys anyways. But then he goes out there and he's a shell of himself and it's just the name, not the game. So I'm a little like kind of change, at least thinking about with the way some of these backup quarterbacks in brief glimpses, maybe it doesn't last, but in brief glimpses have given teams a little jolt in a 1 or 2 week sample. Would we rather not see like just go out there with the backup when you have a solid backup and like a good coaching staff that can prepare them, like I think Cleveland does, like I think Minnesota does. Like, I mean, I don't think Press Taylor is a good offensive coordinator, but theoretically, Doug Peterson can get CJ Beathard to play a game, right? I mean, like, would we rather not see that as opposed to the alternative?
I'm completely open to the idea that Beathard could have been helped the Jacksonville more than Lawrence's 5.1 YPA and 3 interceptions that last week. Sure, 100%. Yes, they both can be true. You know, props for Lawrence going out there and doing that. But at the same time, is he just trying to keep this streak of never missing a game throughout high school, college, and the pros, and in turn actually hurting his own team? And it's absolutely possible that a healthy Beathard would have been better for Jacksonville.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I also the same. Like I said, I totally respect these guys doing that. And I think their teammates, like, I mean, there's got to be mixed feelings, and usually it's probably just results based anyways. Like, if Trevor Lawrence had gone out there on a high ankle sprain, he threw three touchdowns with no interceptions and they win that game, I wouldn't be saying this. So it is very results based, and who knows the real answer to these things. But I'm at least challenging my way of thinking that, so I just wanted to hear your perspective on that. All right, number 27 overall team, Detroit Lions. Despite being 1-2 the last 3 weeks, the Lions are still averaging 141 rushing yards per game. A level of confidence on both of these backs against the Broncos, who I said have been a good defense lately, but Austin Ekeler was able to break out of his slump last week playing against this defense.
Yeah, no, they've been actually just better against the pass, still not getting up 70 points bad against the rush as they were to the Dolphins, but still vulnerable there. I actually ranked them both as top 10 backs. Let's see what their ECR is. 9 and 14 for Montgomery. Montgomery's the favorite at the goal line, so in half PPR, I could see people ranking Montgomery ahead of him even, but I have them as my 6 and 7 backs this week. Lions are so much better at home. I expect that offense to bounce back. Let's see, Detroit has the 3rd highest implied team total this week, behind the Rams, by the way. The Rams are the 2nd highest implied team total this week. So, yeah, I think a lot of, and they're scared of Goff, who's suddenly interception prone. I guarantee you Campbell's going to run the ball more, and then run the ball more. And both these guys are going to approach 20 opportunities.
I would love, yeah. What is the over under on pass attempts for Jared Goff in this game? I mean, smash the under, right? I mean, they're definitely going to be establishing the run. In this one, I'm looking at it and see if it's anything. Just on Russell Wilson on BetMGM right now. I'm at least curious. I'm taking the under on that one. All right, number 28 overall team, Philadelphia Eagles. This one comes in from Sheil Kapadia of The Ringer. Since 2000, there have been 106 teams with 10 plus wins through week 14 of the NFL season. Among that group, the 2023 Eagles rank 103rd. So it's 103rd out of 106 teams with a point differential of plus 21. Dalton, I mean, this Eagles team is just something not right with it. Is it all Jalen Hurts' health, or are there more things to be concerned about here?
Well, I mean, the secondary, I mean, they're just getting lit up there at times. Yeah. So Dallas Goedert's return will help the offense. I expect Swift to kind of bounce back in this spot against Seattle. But I mentioned it earlier. I think, yes, this is a vulnerable Eagles team that's not quite as good as its record indicates. Still dangerous, could beat anyone any given game. But I think They've had a couple of tough spots facing teams with extra rest the last 2 weeks, and now they have to go to Seattle to face a team, you know, 4 straight losses, but again, playing much better than the results. So I think that they could be in trouble this one on Monday night even.
Yeah, Colin said, producer Colin said in the outline, are they the 2022 Minnesota Vikings? I think that might be a little extreme, but I get the sentiment that they are kind of like, the record is a bit more inflated than the actual results. And I wasn't so sure of that. I was wrong. I was kind of pushing back on that idea at different points this year, but they are very talented, but they have clear cut weaknesses. And I'm a little more nervous than you are about DeAndre Swift, even though the matchup is right.
Yeah,
but
it's been bad. It's been bad. I know fantasy points isn't a great reflection of defense, but they're literally allowed the most fantasy points to opposing quarterbacks, literally the most. I mean, that's, you know, tough to do and be an elite defense.
I mean, it's not a perfect reflection, but it ain't a bad reflection either. Like, if you're last among fantasy points allowed to quarterbacks, like, you don't have a good pass defense. Yeah. I think that's pretty obvious. Number 29 team, Miami Dolphins. Tua's 13.2% sack rate on Monday Night Football was the highest of the season. Here's another contender I am concerned about right now. Obviously, Tyreek Hill's injury. We could talk about that. But they have lost so many pieces on the offensive line, and they're – look, we were wrong, Scott and I, to be super concerned about the Dolphins and calling them like maybe this year's team that's going to fall apart, like in the offseason on the flip the script series we did in the offseason. But man, this is what I was talking about, right? Like, fragile offensive line. You lose one wide receiver. What does it look like? Well, we saw what it looked like on Monday night.
Yeah, Connor Williams is on IR now. It's a big problem. That Monday night game was concerning, to say the least. Mm-hmm. Tyreek Hill did a great job of showing why he has an argument for the MVP race. In the MVP race, more on that in a bit. Tyreek Hill's the high ankle sprain, sometimes it gets worse throughout the week. Is how healthy is he going to be in a tough matchup against the Jets? But yeah, just bigger picture. The offense doesn't look the same at all without Hill, and the offensive line issues and blowing the biggest lead in the final 2 minutes to a bad road Tennessee team isn't great either. So yeah, there's issues that appear to be run a little deep there in Miami right now.
Number 30 overall team, Dallas Cowboys. Rico Dowdle has a season high 13 touches in week 14. And he was a little banged up during that game. So how much does this have you concerned for Tony Pollard with the schedule of at Buffalo, at Miami versus Detroit in the fantasy playoffs?
Yeah, it's a bit of concern. 30% of the snaps in the first half. He actually had more carries in the first half before the than Pollard. So, yeah, it's not something to totally ignore there. And we all know how frustrating Pollard has been scoring touchdowns. And the Bills, pretty tough run defense, too. So, not great for Pollard if you're hoping for an eruption week 15.
Yeah, I think he's definitely kind of touchdown or bust running back too, is where I'd have, like, if he can get the goal line carries, that's great, but he didn't get them last week as much. Or at least Rico got in there a little bit. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on if you're trying to rely on Tony Pollard. All right. Number 31 overall team, San Francisco 49ers. Brock Purdy leads the NFL with 14.1 yards per completion. He is 17th among quarterbacks with 200 dropbacks in first read target share, according to Fantasy Points data. Dalton, the floor is yours. Brock Purdy, 49ers. What do you have to say?
You know, Harmon, the MVP discourse gets me fired up online. The actual current odds have Dak Prescott the favorite. But what hurt me even worse is hearing you and Pianowski say that you would vote for Prescott and MVP a couple podcasts ago. Let me state my guy Purdy's case. So it's 9.9 yards per attempt versus 7.8 to Dak Prescott. That's Purdy's is the highest of any qualifying quarterback in 78 years. This is yards per attempt. I mean, Dak Prescott outdoors, who benefits playing indoors, it's 7.1 YPA. Purdy, 10.0 outdoors. This is like saying someone has a 250-point advantage in on-base percentage if you're comparing stats in baseball here. Adjusted net yards per attempt, if you preferred. This stat most correlates with MVP awards. It includes interceptions, touchdowns, and sacks. Purdy, 9.3. Dak Prescott, 7.5. Do you realize the Niners rank last in the NFL in pass attempts? So put differently, Brock Purdy has more passing yards than Dak Prescott on 91 fewer attempts this season. These aren't comparable numbers. Let's talk deep ball. The most accurate deep passer in the NFL, Purdy, on completion percentage is over 20 yards, 63%. Purdy's completion percentage on deep passes is by far the highest PFF has ever recorded. Previous high was 54%. Purdy's at 66%. Passing touchdowns on deep passes, Purdy has 9 this year. Patrick Mahomes had 1 last year. Patrick Mahomes had 2 the year he won the MVP in 2022. Purdy's averaging 10 more yards per game on deep passes than Mahomes over the last 3 years. Let's talk yards after the catch because it's all the system, right? 48% of Brock Purdy's passing yards this season are coming from yards after the catch. That's less than each of the past 3 MVP winners. Steven Ruiz and Ben Solak came out with this gotcha stat recently about how he would still lead the league in YPA on throws behind the line of scrimmage. There's only one problem with that narrative, is that Purdy has attempted the fewest of such passes in the NFL. Literally the fewest of those passes. So that kind of shits on that point. But so Scott Barrett, who's doing Lord's work, comparing the Mahomes padding of these short stuff compared to what Purdy has said, is also notes that the Niners have a bottom 5 pass protection grade by PFF. The past 6 MVP winners all ranked at least top 7 in that grade. Purdy's current passer rating higher than Steve Young's best season, Joe Montana's best season. I won't even get into the fact salary if you really want to talk MVP. Shohei Ohtani, 2 games in Major League Baseball is equivalent to Purdy's salary this season. So if you really want to talk like valuable to team, you factor in his salary. This isn't even, it's not even a contest here. The Niners are the number 1 seed. They blew out Dak Prescott head to head. Recent performances, Brock Purdy on the road versus the Eagles, 24.1 EPA. Dak Prescott at home against the Eagles last week, 6.7 EPA. If Jake Moody doesn't miss a short field goal, the Niners are 11-2, a game and a half. 1.5 games ahead in the NFC. Yes, Christian McCaffrey and all the others are awesome and have been a big help, but it'd simply be impossible to put up the numbers that Purdy has put up without star teammates. BCB for MVP.
I mean, that was amazing. That was great. If that's not clipped for social, and Dalton's not posting that or somebody's not posting that, I mean, come on, this shut down Yahoo Sports right now. I mean, Steven Ruiz and Ben Solak banging a big spot with a gotcha stat. Never heard of the gotcha stat before, but I love that phrase. Listen, For me personally, Dalton, I won't speak for other people. People could check the tapes. I'm pro Purdy. I'm generally pro Purdy. I've been pro Purdy since he got in the mix last year. He's unlocked Brandon Ayuk the way nobody else. I mean, so I'm definitely pro Purdy. If Purdy wins the MVP, I'm perfectly okay with that. My personal MVP is Dak Prescott, but it's an opinion. But look, if Purdy wins it, it's fine with me. You could definitely do the whole like, well, what if Dak was the 49ers quarterback versus Purdy is the Cowboys quarterback? Those guys don't play for those teams, so it doesn't really matter. I don't really think that when we're talking about ranking quarterbacks, like that can definitely come into the discussion, sure. But I think Purdy's added a lot to the system and added a lot to these playmakers. I do not think it is like, oh my God, it's egregious. He could be MVP. I'm perfectly fine with it. I'm not upset by it.
It's funny that like 2 months ago, we're like, is Dak even any good there? I mean, but wasn't Cooper Rush, they were undefeated last year, right? When he took over,
yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong there. One thing I will note though, okay, one thing, the stats, they're not comparable. I mean, the stats are not, it's not even comparable that Purdy wins in the stats. That said, NFL is not baseball, a series of one-on-one events. There's a ton more going on. So I get there's nuance there. And the quarterback's the most important position. So that's why it usually wins. But I totally get that it's nuanced and stats aren't everything when it comes to the NFL. But if you are comparing the stats, they're not even comparable.
Matt Barrows, who's covered the team forever, he covers the team for The Athletic, had this tweet on at KNBR this morning. Brock Purdy said he talked with Nick Mullins before the season to talk about their elbow surgeries. Mullins said his arm might not feel entirely normal until halfway through the season. He was right, Purdy said. Halfway through the year, my arm feels great right now. And I think Purdy has played better and better and better as the year has gone on. And he really was never bad. I mean, yeah, I think he had a little blip there, but I wouldn't even say that he was playing poorly through that 3-game stretch. Like, that's the thing about the MVP race, man. I mean, it's December 13th. This thing is far from over. Like, Purdy could slam the door shut over the next, and Dak could too. I mean, either
Dak could too, because he has a tougher schedule. I mean, if Dak is a favorite now, and if they run the table, I'd say he's the guy. But man, Purdy lost a touchdown pass last week when Debo was tackled at the 1-inch line, and then Debo ran it in the next play. If voters are going to care about that stuff, but no bias here that I happen to have Purdy 45-1 before the season.
Oh no,
the good thing is
you are a completely objective source in this discussion. So. I mean, yeah,
no, I think I laid the case though, in all honesty, and the stats, but I get that there's more nuance to the situation there, but I'll just say, people with his stats win the MVP 101 times out of 100 historically. Let's just be clear about that. That's indisputable.
Yeah, that is definitely indisputable. And to the point that it will be, I mean, I think somebody has to do like something miraculous to kind of push that out of him. And I think
Dak's Dak currently the favorite. He's a betting market favorite now with these stats. But I mean, anyway. Have you seen about the arm strength too? The people will post a video and then other people will say, oh, that's Mac Jones, or arm strength doesn't just equal deep throws, or you're not a ball knower. But anyway, it's funny. And I gotta thank you for letting me go through some therapy here, and we can move on.
Oh no! Listen, this is your podcast, buddy. Number one, it is your podcast, and number two, that's what this is for. Okay, you're allowed to get on your podcast and air your grievances. And I know you're not a Twitter, or you're at least not a active tweeter. I mean, if you're out there just like constantly arguing about Brock Purdy, like, yo, go outside, man. I mean, it just you're just banging your head against the wall at this point, because there's just so much evidence. And people might even be right. Like, you take Brock Purdy out of the situation, throw him on a different offense, he might be terrible. I don't know. We will probably not ever know the answer to that. It's or at least like this version of Brock Purdy. That's another thing too. Like, maybe all these guys are gone in 4 years and Purdy's a big fat starting quarterback with the big fat salary. And maybe he's even better then, because he's just gotten better over the 4 years. Like, it's just, it's crazy. I mean, look, if that's what you love to do, it's what you love to do. I think it's slamming your head against the wall. So
highest YPA in 70 years with a bottom five offensive line playing outdoors. Best record. I don't know. I mean, I get it. Yeah, even call-in producers saying if you put him in Dallas, he doesn't put up the numbers Dak is, but I guess we'll never know.
We will never know. And that's the beautiful part about sports. It's all about arguing like the hypothetical and you know, screaming at each other like you are right 100%, when really it's all so unknowable. And, small margin for error. It's all things like that. That's what makes football beautiful, man. That's what makes it like you said, it's not like baseball. And you know, I mean, shout out to baseball. But it's not like baseball where these one-on-one interactions. And it's a fun thing to talk about. All right. Let's finish here. Number 32 overall team, Baltimore Ravens at Sal Vitri. Our buddy Sal Vitri had this stat on Zay Flowers. Something to monitor. Zay Flowers' usage. He saw his average target distance increase by 50% in week 14. And Zay earns 9 targets per game without Mark Andrews. If the downfield usage continues, we are looking at a league winner down the stretch. He pulled that data from Fantasy Life. Look, obviously, Sal doesn't know that I have put people on prison watch if they use league winner. That's fine. But he's right, though, about Zay Flowers. I mean, the usage jump in week 14 was really encouraging.
Yeah, that is huge downfield. He had a bad drop in the second quarter, but totally redeemed himself with a huge touchdown catch on 3rd and 17 late in that game, followed it up with a 2-point conversion. So yeah, wheels up for Zay Flowers without Mark Andrews. Keaton Mitchell didn't do what we all hoped, especially myself, but I will say, no one cares, but he was tripped up. It was this close to a 60-yard touchdown run, that close. And then Isaiah Likely caught his blown coverage like the next play. No one was around him. He's one of the fastest. He was that close to 6-yard touchdown, but that's all you're relying on when you're only seeing 10 touches a game. So he simply can't be trusted in the fantasy playoffs.
I love these guys like Likely, Flowers, and Beckham. Great usage for Beckham lately. They're taking a less is more approach. Love these three guys against Jacksonville in the fantasy playoffs. Like, I think these guys are all good, solid starts this week. All right, we finished it with Thursday Night Football, and I mean, we didn't save a ton of time for it. Another pretty am I going to watch this game type of Thursday night contest. Chargers, Raiders. Your Chargers stat, because Josh Palmer's coming back. I guess that's interesting. Josh Palmer led the Chargers in receiving yards per route run, 2.24 in weeks 4-8 when he was post Mike Williams and then before he got hurt. Your Raiders stat, the Raiders were dead last in passing success rate last week. I don't know, Dalton. What do we got? Like, what's the total on this one, man? It's got to be painfully low, too.
34. Painfully low, as you said.
Take 34.
Yeah, there's rumblings. Garoppolo may come return if AOC struggles again. Admittedly, AOC was facing such a blitz-heavy defense that they've been playing so well last week. But Josh Jacobs, highly questionable. I mean, do you want to use Zamir White? Probably not. Easton Stick, if you're in a super flex and desperate, he may run. But yeah, a downgrade for Keenan Allen and all these guys with Herbert out.
Allen's hurt too.
And Allen's banged up too. Yeah, no, it's so it's tough. And Quentin Johnston, I know people are a little excited about that nice downfield play he made at the end of last week, but I mean, that was total garbage time. And now Palmer's back and Stick's there. So yeah, no part of the rookie in this game either. But yeah, 34 over under, banged up Josh Jacobs and Keenan Allen. Probably going to be the opposite of Monday's primetime where we got a twin bill that was awesome.
I am desperately refreshing BetMGM to get a Easton Stick rushing prop. Haven't seen one yet. Still looking for it. Otherwise, man, yeah. I mean, this is not a game you're trying to break ties in favor of starting players in. And I mean, I'm really just curious about like Davante Adams. Like, I think they might want to start Jimmy G just because like he'll at least pump Davante Adams full of stats, run like a functional passing game, keep him happy and engaged so that they want to keep him around next year. That might be the only reason you go back to Jimmy G. Otherwise, yeah, it's obviously good to get a look at Aiden O'Connell, but I don't think we've seen much to have a lot of promise in him even being like a high-end backup quarterback down the line.
Yeah, wild that game last week, the Raider game, was scoreless until 2 minutes left. That was the lowest scoring game in NFL history indoors ever.
Yeah, pretty wild stuff. Well, Dalton, this was a hell of a show. We ran pretty long today, and yeah. I'd love to say, oh, we look, jam-packed episode to prep the people for the fantasy playoffs, but a lot of gratuitous blabbering by both of us. You on things that matter, like MVP, me on like backup quarterback theories. So, listen, I hope the people enjoyed the show.
Yeah, good times. I told you I cut the intro short for a reason. I knew I had a lot to get off my chest. So I appreciate you indulging me as well. See you, Harmon. Good times, man, as always.
Appreciate you, buddy. Good luck in your fantasy playoff runs and good luck with your Brock Purdy MVP bet. I regretting not tailing you on that. That would have been a fun sweat for both of us. But alas, here we are. You get to enjoy it. That is going to do it for us today, folks. Tomorrow, big show, week 15 preview. Kendall Valenzuela of Fantasy Life joins the Viewer's Guide episode for week 15. Get hyped for that. Until then, we're out.